Washington, D.C., home of Navy
AP
Athletic.
Radio News. I'm Rita Foley.
Si no, no puedes acercarte.
Pope Francis is in New York, where he prayed at St. Patrick's Cathedral last evening. Maria Carreno is among the thousands who turned out to see him as he traveled through town.
Very excited, yeah. This is amazing to have the Pope to visit us and bless our country.
This morning, the Pope is at the UN, where he will speak to world leaders about some very controversial subjects. Our Julie Walker is in New York and joins us live now.
Rita, the Vatican says Pope Francis will discuss the need for peace, the plight of refugees, and the role of poverty and bad government in driving conflict and migration. But inequality, poverty, the environment, and religious persecution may also be among the issues he highlights for the international audience. The Pope has urged wealthy countries to open doors to migrants seeking better lives, a message that he gave on Thursday in his speech to Congress. The Pope is also meeting with Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, UN officials, and staffers. His visit marks the fifth time a Pope has been in the UN here in New York. Rita?
Julie Walker, live in New York. Germany says about a third of arriving immigrants who claim to be running from the civil war in Syria are not Syrian. Meanwhile, the European Union President Donald Tusk says Europe might need a special border guard unit to deal with what he calls an excessive wave of migrants. He said without border control, there's no migration policy, just chaos. Here at home, the economy is doing better than expected. It grew 3.9% from April through June. And the National Weather Service will be investigating today to see if it was a tornado that hit along the South Carolina coast after an overnight storm damaged several homes there. This is AP Radio News. There are some surprises in a new poll about millennials. Our Shirley Smith is in Washington with this story.
Don't believe the stereotype about millennials being apathetic. A new study found nearly half of them are actively seeking out news. At the top of that list are the activists who make staying informed a priority. Two-thirds of them say following the news makes them better citizens. But even those at the other end of the spectrum know something about world affairs, even if they just stumble on news while they're catching up with Facebook and Twitter accounts or looking for something else online. The project was trying to find a way for journalists to better reach and hold an audience under the age of 35. Shirley Smith, Washington.
Hyundai is recalling some cars because engine parts could fail due to a manufacturing problem. The recall covers late model Sonata sedans. Dealers will inspect the cars and replace the engine assemblies if they have to for free. Rita Foley, AP Radio News.
Here are some of the stories we're following at Federal News Radio. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell moves a bipartisan stopgap spending bill to fund the government through December 11th. An earlier bill that defunded Planned Parenthood failed to pass. The new bill is expected to pass easily next week. Congress has until Wednesday to avoid a government shutdown. 11 freshman Republican House members write to their colleagues saying Congress should avoid another government shutdown. They're led by Ryan Costello of Pennsylvania and Elise Stefanik of New York. They say they're willing to support a short-term continuing resolution to give members more time to negotiate. The General Services Administration awards a $937 million contract to help the Defense Department detect, mitigate, and manage global threats. Booz Allen Hamilton won the deal through the OASIS Professional Services Multiple Award Contract. Under the five-year deal, Booz Allen will provide program management, strategic planning, and threat and intelligence analysis and assessments. Find these stories and more at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Tom Temin.
The more we learn about the recent breaches of government data, the worse it gets. This is Federal News Radio, Senior Correspondent Mike Causey. As usual, when something bad happens, people ask who, what, when, where, and why. The first four are usually the easiest. We, that is our government, pretty much knows what personal data about you was stolen and when. We even know which government did it. And although we aren't supposed to say, here's a spoiler alert. The head of that government is in Washington, D.C. today, and it isn't the Pope. Anyhow, defending against something like a data breach is almost always easier if you know why they stole what they did. Why get the home addresses of federal agents or IRS employees? Why take the Social Security numbers of people who work for Social Security? So who's smart enough to figure that out? How about you? You've been there, been in the trenches, know how things work, and lots of secrets. So sound off. Sign up for my column and all our email alerts at federalnewsradio.com/alerts. I'm Mike Causey.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, brought to you by CDWG, people who get it.
Now, In Depth with Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening on Friday, September 25th, 2015. It is the Federal News Countdown, the three most important federal news stories of the week, selected this week by Jerry Buchholz, Strategic Business Development Advisor for FMP Consulting and former Chief Human Capital Officer. Countdown.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And your colleague today, you were actually drafted by your colleague on the Countdown.
I believe
today.
That is correct.
Catherine Medina is Chief Talent Officer at APCO Worldwide and former Executive Director of the Chief Human Capital Officers Council. It's great to see you, my friend. Thanks for coming
great
in.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And you're quite the globetrotter in this job. You were telling us during the break about all the places that you're headed, so we're glad that you could catch us on one of your stints stateside.
Absolutely.
You have both made terrific choices for this week's Federal News Countdown, and we'll start where we always do with
number three.
And Catherine, your choice at number three is my colleague Mike Causey's column, which is headlined Phased Retirements, and the winner, sort of, is HUD. What Mike's getting at is, I think, that it's taken a little bit longer than I believe folks hoped for phased retirement to really catch on in the government.
So when I look at the title, Clever as Always by Mike, the winner sort of is HUD. I think the winner sort of is really everybody, because to me it's not about who's out of the gate first or what enrollment is like early on. I think it's doing it and getting it out there and giving people options and talking about it and having the flexibility. When you and I have talked about this previously as the painful process of getting the regulations out last year from OPM were happening. But I think it's a great story. I think it's good for everyone. I think it's okay if it's not perfect and we don't know what it's going to lead to, but it's the right direction.
The risk aversion is the thing, I think, Jerry, that a lot of people were unsure about, and Catherine makes a terrific point. It may not be perfect, but let's just start it. Let's just do it and refine it as we need to, shape it as we move along, but get going. Somebody just do something.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that it wasn't clear up front was how many moving parts there were to this and how many different people needed to change processes, forms, IT systems and procedures. Mm-hmm. And so it took a little bit longer to get all of those gears linked together to create a machine.
Mike writes, now that HUD's broken the ice, other agencies are expected to unveil their programs. This could turn into a snowball effect, I imagine. Do you think that's what we'll see here, Catherine?
Sure. Well, you've had agencies like Social Security say that, this is not for them right now. And I was a little disappointed to say that, some agencies might think it's too complicated or it might impact morale. That's their choice. But I think over time, when you start to see some successes and some good stories, and someone has to go test the water, somebody has to be an early adopter. So I applaud HUD and Department of Energy, who started this in March. And I don't think they have, really significant numbers at this point. But again, at least they're out there along with the Library of Congress.
Mike writes, Energy said DOE's launched its program in March. Not sure that anybody has applied or been accepted yet, but there are rules in place. Is that the most important thing, Jerry? Is that more important than the uptake, the number of people who actually go for it?
I think you always want to offer a benefit to your workforce. And in this case, this is a benefit to the workforce. I think agencies that are thinking through their strategy of how to use this new program as a part of their workforce shaping strategy are the ones that are going to be more successful. At NASA, I recall we had many employees over the age of 70 who had been with the space program for a really long time, who wanted to continue that ongoing relationship with the agency, but we were very interested in a reduced number of hours and mentoring the next generation of STEM professionals. So for that kind of a role, this program is perfect.
The third most important federal news story of the week is selected by Catherine Medina, Phased Retirement, and the winner, sort of, is HUD. It's my colleague Mike Causey's column on federalnewsradio.com. Jerry, your choice at number three. Again, a case of you can take the girl out of NASA, but you can't take NASA out of the girl. Astronauts in space have already watched Matt Damon's The Martian movie. And this also, by the way, the first time anybody's ever chosen a story from GQ on the Federal News Countdown.
I try to be balanced.
So congratulations on that. Matt Damon's new movie, The Martian, premiered aboard the International Space Station, where the astronauts really showed off their high tolerance for stress by watching a movie about an astronaut who gets stranded on Mars.
So I chose this story for several reasons. The first was I actually loved the book, and I've been a big fan of sci-fi since I was a child.
Shocking.
So, yeah, I just loved the book. I read it while I was flying around on airplanes for work, and I was just fascinated by the idea that a person on a planet where nothing grows could figure out how to grow enough potatoes to keep himself alive. The second reason that I chose this was because as I was reflecting on the pending government shutdown, whether it happens or not, it suddenly occurred to me that when the government did shut down a couple of years ago, the number one movie at the box office was Gravity.
Oh, wow.
With Sandra Bullock. And so the idea that another space movie about NASA astronauts would be, you know, coming out at the same time just rang a bell in my head. And the third reason that I picked it was because I realized while I was thinking about that when human beings first walk on Mars, those people are going to be GS-15 civil servants.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that our federal workforce is out there every day exploring, discovering new things, solving problems that have resisted resolution for centuries is just really fascinating to me. I picked GQ as the outlet because they added snappy repartee to the NASA press release.
I imagine so. The story says, of course, this isn't the first time the International Space Station astronauts have exhibited their bravery. Back in April, they watched Gravity show offs. So, you know, now we know where Jerry comes down on the side of journalism versus I don't even know how to describe it. Because I don't do it. I'm not that witty when it comes to writing stuff for the internet.
I do like some snappy repartee.
There's nothing wrong with that.
You knew she was going to bring that to the show, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, she doesn't disappoint
no,
at all.
Delivers every time.
That's right.
The item that goes along with this that I thought was really cool, Catherine, was recently, I believe it was Neil Armstrong's expense report for going to the moon showed up on the internet. And I thought, how many people who have been in government for a long time look at that form and recognize the form? And there was some place where he wrote the purpose of the, like it was the hotel he stayed in before the night before, uh-huh. and he just wrote moon.
Yeah.
And I thought that was
awesome.
About the coolest thing going.
Yeah.
The third most important federal news story of the week is selected by Jerry Buchholz. Is astronauts in space have already watched Matt Damon's The Martian. It's from GQ, and you can find it and all of our stories on this week's Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we come back, the second most important federal news stories of the week is selected by Jerry Buchholz and Catherine Medina. It's the Federal News Countdown, and we're back in a moment. Welcome back to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week. This week selected by Catherine Medina and Jerry Buchholz. And we'll be back to the countdown in a moment. But I wanted to geek out for a minute if I could, because we mentioned in the last segment, in conjunction with Jerry's choice for number three, that the International Space Station astronauts had seen the movie The Martian that Matt Damon is in. I thought it was Neil Armstrong's expense report for the moon. So the beauty of the internet is that if you know what you're doing, you can find anything in just about 2 seconds. So it turns out it was actually Buzz Aldrin. So my apologies to Colonel Aldrin. And he has posted his expense report to go to the moon. He's promoting a book about his vision for space travel, which actually looks like it's pretty cool. It's called Mission to Mars, My Vision for Space Exploration. So I printed this out, and Jerry's looking at it right now. So it's got the itemized list of the places that he went to claim $33.31 in expenses, and it's wild to look at it.
Yeah, I remember these forms. Back in the day, you had to list every destination and place you stopped. So Colonel Aldrin has very appropriately listed Houston, Cape Canaveral, Moon, Pacific Ocean, Hawaii, and then back home again.
And those are all the places that he went.
Yeah, and he claimed about $33 worth of parking and mileage.
Used for 100 miles official vicinity travel at Cape Kennedy. I just think that's so cool.
I think it's one
of the coolest things. And he posted it on Twitter. The thing that he posted with it says it was for Throwback Thursday, July 31st. And he says, my mission director at Buzz Christina, who is his manager, my favorite piece of my memorabilia, my travel voucher to the moon, #Apollo 11.
It's amazing.
I mean, but it the reason that I think that that's cool to recognize also is this is, as you mentioned, the first person that goes to Mars is going to be a GS-15. And yeah. He was an equivalent, I imagine, at the time.
Yeah, he was a colonel in the Air Force. Was he in the Air Force? I don't recall. In any case, when people head to Mars, there's going to be a combination of military, U.S. civil servants, and people from other countries as well. But we need to always remember, I think, that the people who work for the federal government do amazing things. And at the end of the day, we all have to fill out our paperwork.
He was an Air Force colonel, I've confirmed. And so good call on your part. But I'll figure out a way to link that up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later today, because it's really cool to look at it and imagine somebody sitting there going, okay, well, now I got to write this up after he said just come back from the moon. All right, on with the countdown now at
number two.
And Jerry, your choice at number two is similar, at least, to Catherine's choice at number two. Both of your stories is the second most important federal news story of the week, have to do with the shutdown. And I want to ask you both in turn, not so much about your stories, but Catherine, I'll start with you. How come you didn't put this at number one? Does it have to do with what you think about the shutdown, or does it have to do with what you think about your number one story? Don't give it away, but what's the dynamic
there? It's a combination, I think. I mean, so a part of me says, wow, shutdown again. Mm-hmm. You know, and basically those are Jeff words, you know, there you go again. You know, so there's a part of me that says, wow, we're still talking about this, or we're talking about it again. And there are endless stories. It's everywhere you turn, but the flip side is you have to keep talking about it. It's that important to educate people, to remind people, politicians and just, you know, regular civilians on the impact, which is just staggering. And it's beyond my comprehension, you know, how we continue to get to this place, given how irresponsible this whole discussion and the situation is.
Catherine, your choice is our friend Jeff Neal's post on the chiefhro.com blog, which is also at federalnewsradio.com. And Jeff was on the program today talking about this list that he's put together of all of the things that impact people that really don't have a whole lot to do with the federal government, but impact them just the same. The one that jumped out at me, I don't know what it says, but the fact that 2 million liters of U.S. alcoholic beverage products were sitting on ports, couldn't leave the country because the Treasury Department's Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau was not able to issue certificates that it was okay for those products to be exported. I bet if you walked down the street and asked 100 people how would the shutdown affect the economy, nobody would predict that alcohol exports would be a factor, but 2 million liters sounds like an awful lot of booze to me, and that's an awful lot of money to the companies that manufacture it.
2 million liters, 6,300 children that are, you know, delayed because of the Head Start holdup, and, you know, small businesses that aren't able to get their loans. You know, I mean, the government doesn't work to serve itself. It works to serve the people. So it only stands to reason you stop those services, and the people are the ones who are impacted. And we saw it firsthand last time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a shame we have such a short memory.
Well, I suggested to Jeff, Jerry, that might be the reason that people who were, I mean citizens, not people in Congress, who didn't care about the shutdown before it happened in 2013 or who were in favor of it, polls turned dramatically after the shutdown afterwards, and people seemed, I think the numbers were in the 70s or 80s percentage-wise of people who in hindsight thought it was a really bad idea. And I mean, you can't get 70% of people of Americans to agree the sky's blue most of the time.
Yeah, that's true. And I think Catherine's point is really good. The government doesn't exist to serve itself. It exists to serve the American people. And I believe that people who work for the federal government feel that very, very deeply. I'm fascinated by the approach they take with the Australian federal government. If their legislature fails to pass a budget, it's the legislature that gets sent home when a new general election is held, so that the people of Australia can have the opportunity to elect representation who will do the job that they've elected them to do, and their federal government automatically goes on a continuing resolution.
That's pretty interesting.
What a novel idea.
But that's one of the beauties of the parliamentary system.
That's correct.
Australia's system very similar to Great Britain in that case, and they just actually tossed their guy down. The Tony Abbott is out within the last week or two as the prime minister in Australia. Your choice, Jerry, at number two is from the Washington Post. The headline, shuttering the government actually costs more than keeping it open, more than $2 billion last time. And the focus here is on GAO reports and an accounting from the Office of Management and Budget. And here's one that I think a lot of people didn't think about. Auditors found that furloughed Health and Human Services employees, among many others, were eligible to apply for unemployment insurance during the shutdown. They turned to the Department of Labor, which administers the insurance program. It's different in every state. After the shutdown, HHS had to figure out how to advise its employees to stop their applications or, in some cases, repay the insurance benefits since they received back pay. That's all hours, man-person hours, that are required on the parts of these organizations to go back and clean up after the mess.
Clean up after the shutdown certainly was really a big haul, and it took a really long time to regain momentum. The reason I picked this story is because it was one of the few stories that I saw that also highlighted what the level of effort is going into a shutdown. So right now, HR offices and CFOs across the federal government are deep into shutdown planning. Up till now, they've probably been spending half their time planning for the shutdown. Starting on Monday, it will be 100% of their time. And that means, you know, your job vacancy announcements aren't going out, your certs aren't being delivered to the hiring managers, end of the year, closing of the books, all of those things that happen in HR offices and CFOs have all really been put on hold. And the loss of productivity in federal agencies that have no choice but to take it seriously because they don't know what's going to happen in the middle of the night on Wednesday is difficult going into and difficult climbing out of.
I know it's probably not the most opportune time to say it, but I remain optimistic. The timeline as it appears today is that Speaker Boehner is meeting with members of his caucus to try to convince them to vote on a clean continuing resolution that the Senate is expected to send over on Monday. It will have nothing objectionable to the White House or to congressional Democrats. And if he can do that, we'll know about what that looks like on Monday, obviously. But if he can do that, then my fingers are crossed, and you can't see it, but my toes are crossed too.
Yeah, I think everyone will breathe a heavy sigh of relief because no one wants to engage in a whole bunch of level of effort that ends up going nowhere and
right.
not getting
used. Jeff, you know, I love Jeff's line where he says, you know, in terms of the planning that you have to do regardless, that, you know, feds basically have the choice of being wasteful or irresponsible. And that's just, I mean, it's such an unacceptable position to be put in.
It really is unfortunate. Jerry's choice is the second most important federal news story of the week is from the Washington Post. Shuttering the government actually costs more than keeping it open, more than $2 billion last time. And it's got some terrific detail about the costs involved in the 2013 shutdown. Catherine's choice at number two is from Jeff Neal, the chief HRO.com blog, and it's cross-posted on federalnewsradio.com as well. Shutdown reducts borrowed money to burn. And you can find all the stories on this week's Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we come back, the top of the chart, the most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Catherine Medina and Jerry Buchholz, it's the Federal News Countdown. Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. The three most important federal news stories of the week is selected this week by Jerry Buchholz and Catherine Medina. And we are up to
number one.
Catherine, your choice at number one. I have no idea that somebody would figure out how to work the Pope into the countdown. This is, first it was GQ about a movie, and that took us to Buzz Aldrin's expense report, and now we're on the Pope, and your choice at number one, the nine most notable Pope quotes from yesterday's speech. This is from Politico. What about what the Pope said spoke to you about managing in the federal government space?
So the interesting thing for me was it was a historic visit to addressing the joint session of Congress and some Supreme Court members as well. It was a packed house. What I loved about it was, you know, his appeal, and, you know, everyone's got Pope fever. I have Pope fever. He's just a phenomenal, amazing man who really just speaks his beliefs and his values. So, you know, there's a hopefulness and an optimism that he goes to Congress and not with a political agenda, but with his, you know, heartfelt, you know, message of, you know, let's all get along, talking about everything from climate change to immigration and refugees, all these things that are obviously top of mind to us in the news. And, you know, so there's an upbeat, wow, hopeful, this is great, people are going to be inspired by him, maybe we can pass a budget, maybe we can resolve the immigration crisis, and of course it didn't take but, you know, a few hours, if that, after he left the chambers for each side to start spinning his words into their own agenda. But for a moment, I was pretty hopeful that maybe he would have a positive impact.
The Pope is in New York now and will be spending the day there and leaving New York City tomorrow, I believe. As a residual effect, now I mentioned I had Jeff Neal on the program talking about his blog post. That was your choice at number two, and I said to Jeff beforehand, Jeff, ever the contrarian, and I love him, and this is why. I'll just tell a quick story on him. I said to him, you know, I've been telling people for a couple of weeks now that I think that the Pope coming to Washington was going to be like a snowstorm. Everybody would freak out because they think we're going to get 2 feet of snow and traffic's going to be horrible and all of that. And then we get a dusting and it doesn't turn out to be such a big deal. Mm-hmm. And he took this pin and popped my balloon by saying, yes, that's because everybody did exactly as they were supposed to and didn't stay home. And I went, okay, so pragmatic Jeff wins again. I was trying to be cynical and cranky, and he just very calmly said, boop, that's the end of that idea. The Pope being here, some of the things that he talks about, Jerry, there's a whole lot made of the ideology here and there and the other thing. And the reason that I think Catherine's choice is great is because the quotes that Politico chose, while they address those topics, if you read the words, it's hard for me to see where people can really disagree on a lot of the stuff that he talks about. And it makes me think that what's happening with him is what's happening in things like the shutdown and stuff, where maybe a lot of folks are just talking past each other. And when you look at what they have to say, they don't disagree on a lot of things, maybe just one or two things that would be the places to focus.
So one of the interesting things that as I was looking as well at articles about the Pope, and there were several articles, leadership lessons that you can learn from observing the Pope. And so your personal beliefs may be very, very different from those that the Pope is communicating, but universally people view him as an inspirational leader. And they view him as an inspirational leader, even if his beliefs differ from their own beliefs. And I think that's incredibly moving. And when I was watching him and his care for those people who need someone to care about and for him, for them, I was really struck by his approach to reconcile people with each other and with the bigger picture of what we are all working on, those of us who work in public service, which is making, you know, protecting the nation, ensuring the economic well-being and the welfare of the citizenry. So I too found a lot of the stories about the Pope and some of his things that he does in terms of quiet time for reflection to really think about you know, what does he think about particular issues? And I thought there were a lot of good lessons to be learned from him and from this visit.
I have a list of five things here, Catherine, that somebody wrote down, that somebody that you might know, that I think match up with the Pope quotes that you cite in your story.
Mm-hmm.
Executive demeanor, role modeling, open and frank discussion, preparing for the worst, hoping for the best, and resilience. Those kind of match up pretty well with what we've seen from the Pope.
Sure does.
I think that's my article.
Oh my gosh, it is.
Oh my God.
Wow, what a coincidence.
Wow, I wrote that long before the Pope came to visit. So what do you know?
So more like the Pope than you ever knew.
Who knew? Who knew?
That's pretty amazing. Catherine Medina's choice is the most important federal news story of the week is from Politico, the 9 most notable Pope quotes. And you can find that and all of our stories on this week's countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important story as chosen by Jerry Buchholz. We'll wrap up this week's federal news countdown next on In Depth with Francis Rose. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose. The Federal News Countdown features the 3 most important federal news stories of the week, as selected this week by Catherine Medina and Jerry Buchholz. And Jerry, your choice at number 1 is my colleague Scott Massioni's story titled Carter Leans In to New Initiative at DOD. This is Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In Initiative. She has a nonprofit group. She, of course, is the CEO at Facebook and has written a book about titled Lean In, and has started this nonprofit organization. And the Defense Department, from what Scott reports, has really bought into this concept. And now it gets the endorsement of Secretary Carter, which it doesn't make it official, but it really does put an imprimatur on it that makes people think this is something I really better pay attention to. Is that fair to say, do you think?
I think that's a very fair thing to say, because that's exactly what happened to me. And when I was reading through the stories this week and making my choices, I took a look at all the different stories that I had read, and I asked myself, which of these stories made me think differently, and which of these stories made me do something that I would not have ever done unless I read the news story? And this was the one for me. And I saw the article, and I've heard a lot about the book. It comes up in a lot of women in STEM meetings and other organizations or groups that have formed together in order to promote equality of women in the workforce. And so I read the article and I went to the website, I enrolled in the website, and I joined a circle of women STEM professionals. And I thought, well, what is the most important story to me this week? It's the one that enlightened me and made me change my own behaviors.
Mm-hmm. The passage in this story that I found the most interesting, Catherine, is this one. Air Force Master Sergeant Heather Morales started a lean-in group at the Pentagon after Sandberg visited this spring. She was one of the service members who met with Carter and Sandberg. Her circle has about 12 members, including 2 men.
Yeah.
Which,
if you read Sheryl Sandberg's book, which I did the minute it came out, and it's really very, very inspiring, and I quote it a lot. It's a great book, but you'll find on there that Sheryl talks a lot about the role of men in promoting women in leadership. So she famously talks about and credits her late husband with her success, mm-hmm, and her ability to do what she does and balance family and her other obligations. And so I think there's that story that maybe doesn't get told as much about how important it is to have men support the Lean In initiative as much as it is women.
Well, if we separate out the gender issue, mm-hmm, I mean, it's hard to, but let's try to for a moment. If there's one group that has a monopoly on something, and that monopoly is eventually going to be broken somehow, there have to be members of that monopoly who are willing to say this other group should also have access to whatever it is that we have a monopoly on. And so while it seemed counterintuitive to me at the beginning, after I chewed on it a little bit, Jerry, it made perfect sense that there would be some early adopters in that group that has the monopoly or holds the majority of something. In this case, it's authority positions inside the Defense Department who say this monopoly isn't such a great idea, and what can I do to be part of the change that's necessary and coming?
And it's true. Inclusion goes in all directions. And we have to always remember that women don't need to join women's groups to learn how to be women. Women already know how to be women. All people need to be a part of all groups so everyone can understand each other much, much better. And I will say the advancement of women in the Department of Defense is something that has been being talked about since I entered federal service in the early 80s. And people have worked really hard on this issue. It has not been for lack of effort. There have been really dedicated people working on this for decades. What tends to happen is they tend to repeat what they have done in the past. So what really inspires me about this story is really taking a bold step forward and say empowering women in the Department of Defense to take a hold of their own lives, their own careers, to help each other, and using a social media platform which allows for 24-hour access around the globe to do that.
The markers in this case are gender. There are any number of others that we could look at across government. We could use any kind of demographic piece of information that you want to. What do we think, though, are the next two or three steps beyond efforts like this to increase inclusion of everybody? We can even leave particular groups aside. To make sure that the workforce is more inclusive and diverse is even a term I've started to kind of go a little bit because it seems to be kind of overwrought.
Right. So I think back to the point about having men in the lean-in circles. Mm-hmm. If the men don't think there's anything wrong,
right,
then it's very, very hard to get them to get behind your cause. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important. I also think. You know, in Cheryl's book, she talks a lot about this phenomenon about feeling like you're not good enough or sort of not being able to break through to a leadership level is absolutely not only for women. It's very, very prominent in minorities as well, and in Hispanics in particular. And I talk a lot about that when I speak on Latina issues. So I think, you know, the time I spent at OPM, and Jerry knows this from her work on the Chico Council, we have tried so many different initiatives to try to increase diversity. The president has executive orders and a memorandum. And the numbers move, but they move slowly. And I think retention is a big factor in that, because even when you bring them in and you have these great recruitment practices and you're changing the way you look at your talent pool, it really does come down to, are people feeling like there's a place for them? And, you know, the idea that there's only 9% of generals in the U.S. military, I mean, there's definitely room for improvement. But I think I saw a lot of great things while I was at OPM, so hopefully that's continuing.
The men in the lean-in groups, the term that comes to mind is logjam breakers. As to what they might be doing, that they might be the ones to take whatever those big sticks are that the guys that do that do and kind of clear the way for the stuff to move down the river. Would that be a good model for some of the other areas where it's been difficult for groups in government to make the gains that we would like to see them make? Would that model work to have the folks in other minority groups try to recruit people who aren't like them to come into these groups? I'm thinking of some of the executive groups that are based on all kinds of varieties of minority groups.
Right. I think it's always important to have allies, and it's important to have allies who can actually make things happen that you need to make happen. And it shouldn't matter what that person looks like when you look at them. And I think it would absolutely be wise and very empowering for these groups to have people who are smoothing the road out, eliminating roadblocks and barriers, and serving as good role models, as people and leaders, regardless of what the demographics of those people are, inspiring everyone to want to achieve more and be more than they are today.
We are receiving breaking news at this hour that we have details on as we learn them at federalnewsradio.com. And we don't know yet what the implication is for the shutdown or what will happen with the funding of the federal government next week. But we're learning that the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, has announced that he will leave Congress, not just step down as Speaker, but will leave Congress at the end of October.
Wow.
And so there are potentially great implications for what that means. as the shutdown happens or doesn't happen next Wednesday. And, of course, details throughout the day on federalnewsradio.com. Jerry Buchholz's choice is the most important federal news story of the week, now usurped, I guess, by the Speaker of the House, is Scott Moscione's story, Carter Leans Into New Initiative at Department of Defense. And all of the stories from this week's Federal News Countdown are on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Catherine Medina, it's great to see you. Thank you very much for coming in.
And, great time.
And thank
always.
You for recruiting your friend here, who I'm sure would have been very reluctant to do it had it not been
sure,
for you.
Sure.
Jerry, it's terrific to see you, and thank you very much for being on the countdown.
Oh, my pleasure. It was really fun.
And I do, again, want to call people's attention to your commentary on federalnewsradio.com, that now is the time to act like mission control. It's a terrific piece, and I thank you very much for sharing it with us. The Federal News Countdown is back next Friday on In Depth with Francis Rose, and all the stories from this week's countdown archived at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Thanks for listening.